Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, episode 96. And now, another design studio conversation about presentation design and the business of running a design studio.
Well, welcome, Lori Coller, CEO of TLC Creative Services. I asked Lori to record this episode with me for, well, it's based on some of our recent conversations in the TLC Creative Services Design Studio. We're looking at this year's calendar and determining when we should put out a help wanted listing. Right at the top, though, this is a conversation with just Lori and I. Hi, Nolan. Hi, Sandy. I know you guys aren't here today. Thanks much for letting us hijack the episode. But I also want to put out a notice that this is not a call for applications. We're actually not hiring at TLC Creative Services right now, or I should say when this episode releases, because if you're listening to this later, it might be one of those cycles when we do have a help wanted listing out there. But it did bring up a lot of good points, and we're going to discuss what it is to what a help wanted listing for a presentation designer is from a hiring manager's perspective. So some of our perspective on what we've seen and what we're looking for, thought it might be nice to have out there in the presentation industry. Lori, thank you for joining me.
Hey there. It is so nice to be back. I'm usually listening to you guys as I'm driving, and it's kind of fun to be on this side for a change. And I'm with TLC, as everyone probably has figured out by now. And just to give a little way of background, I come from a more formal education, a degree in graphic design, with years of experience in the print design arena. And so as a design studio, we do handle print. We do web, we do video illustration. We do branding projects for some of our large corporate clients. But of course, you know, we are in the presentation world, where we love to live and be creative. So, but I love this topic. And with hiring, we have specifically targeted our listings to be for presentation designers, not graphic designers. And so I think this will be a good chance to chat, and hopefully some people will get some good information.
Absolutely. So to clarify that, or I should say, we actually have a number of specific items we detail in our position listings. Our end goal is a presentation designer. But maybe just to clarify, we gave up on asking for somebody with PowerPoint expertise several years ago because everyone feels like they're an expert in PowerPoint. I mean, they can add bullet text, they can add an image to a PowerPoint. Done. Expert. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you know there is a whole lot more to it than that. So what we're really looking for is we're looking for a designer that can apply design principles to PowerPoint, or using PowerPoint or Keynote or any of the other presentation design applications as the canvas. Our position listings, it's actually, we're looking for a well-rounded designer with experience, and probably more, we're looking for that likable personality as one of the key attributes. And we indicate the studio does lots of presentation design as part of the listing. Yeah. So does that make sense, Lori? Because that's
It does. I think as we were chatting about this ahead of time, that, you know, for this conversation, one of the main goals is for us to talk through what it takes to get someone's resume into the yes pile versus the no pile. And if we have time, maybe we'll go a little deeper and go beyond that. But I think this is going to be great. I'm actually anxious to talk this through.
Great, and absolutely correct. So let me set a scene for everybody listening in. TLC Creative Services, we're a boutique. We're 10 people in a design studio, and that is boutique size compared to, like, say, the agencies of 20, 50, 200 people that we work with. But we are large in the presentation design space. We realize we're kind of an in-between entity. Within design, I think we're fairly large, and that we have a whole design team focused on one specific element. But and presentation design, I think we mostly see independent designers or small departments within a corporate structure, or maybe within an agency. So one of the elements we are very conscientious of, or very specific about, is that TLC Creative Services, being on the TLC Creative Design Team, is not a remote work environment. Everyone on the TLC design team needs to live close to the studio. Well, let me rephrase that. They need to be in the design studio. So by default, they kind of need to be close to us. On average, I would also say, because we're kind of saying a scenario here, we put out a listing, a help wanted listing. We leave it up for 3 weeks and then we pull it down and we receive up to 300 resumes that we have to wade through. So again, we have to kind of strategically plan our timing because we need time to look through all those and come up with this stuff. Lori, I think we have a pretty streamlined process at this part for identifying at least who we're going to go into the interview with.
Well, and that's, figuring out over time. I mean, 5, 10, 15 years ago, our process was not very good. And I think we took a long time figuring some things out, but I love what we do now. I think it works. You already mentioned it. The real value and what we're looking for is this idea of a team. We work as a team. It's very collaborative. So one of the first items we look at is, where that person is located, because this is a team sport. We're all in the office together. We're sharing ideas together. We're all ideating concepts sometimes at the same time. It's not a contest, but sometimes people post the winning concept on the board, which is kind of fun. But back to the idea at hand, if you've got someone that's outside of the area, telecommuting is just not an option for us for our work environment. And so we do a quick read to see if there's a reason, why their location and the studio don't match. Sometimes it's they're moving to the area or something. But so if nothing in their resume or their work experience is immediately compelling, that person is usually moved to the no list because that's one of our key criteria, no matter how perfect they may be.
And understanding, again, this is a conversation about our practices and what we see. One of the key elements is we just want you to be local to our studio. Doesn't apply to everybody.
We don't draw a map. And if you're outside the line, it's just, can you reasonably get to the studio without, having to deal with traffic or headaches and take hours to commute in? That's just exactly. Not fair to you. And it's not fair to the team.
Not something I would want. Now to be so... It's kind of amazing to me as we look through our resumes that a great many people do not indicate where they live on the cover letter, on the resume, on the portfolio, on the original email. I mean, we've listed it as a criteria, and it does kind of surprise me that it doesn't come up as a listed item. I mean,
sometimes in the response we get from them, they will answer that question, but oftentimes they don't. And maybe could it be because they're willing to move anywhere? I don't know.
It might be I've often wondered if it's like a resume element, like just list your information, let your experience speak for itself. Don't list any details like what neighborhood you live in, but I need to know what city you live in. Like, are you within a city? Now we should also set the stage here for everybody else. We say this TLC Creative Services is San Diego area. We're actually just outside of San Diego. We're not in the major, how do I want to say this?
Metropolitan.
We're in the valley. Yeah, we're not in the major metropolitan area. We're in the inland valley. We live in the wine country. It's beautiful and wonderful, but it also means we're not next to everything immediately. So it's very easy for somebody to be 90 minutes away because there's basically a mountain between us and the ocean, the beach community. So, we don't want people driving around that mountain. I wouldn't want to do that. So I don't want to hire somebody and kind of ask them to do it. But I am surprised that, item number one, it's our first look. If you don't list where you live, you kind of go into the no pile. If there's something compelling or really great about you, we may follow up with you, but it does place you lower on the list because now we're already moving on to the other names.
And I think this is just one item. I know, let's wait, but I have a few other things that I've noticed that are not on resumes routinely, which really surprised me. So, but let's, if you don't mind, let's move on for a second. We've been talking about communication and how much, we have a team environment. We value that team, that communication. And that goes beyond just in a collaborative design environment. We value communication just as much as design skills. As an example, we have a rule of thumb at the office that if you receive an email from a client, the goal is to reply the same day. And even more than that, the goal is preferably reply back to the client within 45 minutes. If anything, just confirming, hey, got your email, I'll address it later. Or, hey, got your email and I'm going to send you a quick process status. Or send a recap of a needs list, you know, later on. Something, but again, communicate with the client so they know they've been heard. So with that in mind, I am looking for an email that has more than a, I would like to work for you. You know, even if there is a wonderful cover letter, I would love to see an email that is articulate and that introduces the cover letter and is specifically addressing the position that we're offering, not just a, you can tell when someone's just literally sending their email and the resume to everybody on that they find a listing for.
Okay, so that's a presentation manager's perspective. We get an email. It can have no text in it, not even a signature line, and attached to it's a resume and a portfolio. There's no personality to that.
Yep.
That person has not stood out. Well, they've stood out, but not in a good way. And it usually goes into our, we actually track everything in OneNote. All the resumes come in. We do track them all. So we can kind of collaborate between the two of us. And we just literally say, no, you know, the introduction email has a little column. What do you see about it? Yeah, it's like what Lori just said. It's like, I would like to work for you, period. That's not really communicating in a positive way. And then other ones just show up with nothing. Conversely, maybe we'll cover this a little bit later. Like, what do people, you know, we have it in our goods little list, right? So people do include a lot of good information.
Yeah.
Well, let me move us on. Let's say, so we talked about where they live. We want them to actually communicate with us in that.
Well, you've put out the request for a resume, right? You said, hey, we have a job listing. You've given the requirements. And so, you know, the directions in the listing are always send your resume and no solicitation.
That's a really good point because, okay, now this one again applies to us because, so we do have a policy that says we're not going to accept in-office solicitation. So no dropping off resumes, no stopping by with a portfolio. It's great, but we don't have a dedicated HR department and hiring is kind of a secondary event to the actual design work that we do and the business operations. And somebody stopping in is going to affect us being able to focus on what we're going to consider a higher need on any day over hiring. If you're hired and you're on a team, you're a top priority, but getting there, it's not our primary focus. So we've had a few people try and stop by and we just say thank you. And they actually go to the bottom of the list because I think we need to clarify our job listings. The last item, it says no solicitation. I mean, we very clearly do say it now. So if you get a job listing that says don't do something, do you break the rules and do it?
I am convinced that there are instructors, teachers, courses that are really trying to help people stand above and they say break the rules. And maybe that works for some things. You hear stories about somebody got their first job at Disney because they broke the rule. That's fine. Just we don't want people to break the rules. I consider it a sign of respect.
Respect of our time as well. We just don't really have time for it. Going further on that communication though. So that introduction email is great. There's a cover letter. There's a resume. If any of those elements have, I'm setting this up because Lori's going to go off on a rant here. If they have poor grammar or poor spelling, we pretty much note that element. And it's a huge negative to us.
Agreed. I don't know. Am I old school to expect that adults should be able to spell? I mean, if it's a difficult word, I'll give it to you. But there should not be any typos and there should be good grammar. And I'll tell you, if there's a typo, if you misspell my company name, you're out. Guaranteed. I will not open your resume. I'm pretty gracious. I'll open almost every resume I'll receive. But if you misspell my company name, forget it. And the grammar. You know, I'm hiring someone not only to be a designer, but to communicate with my clients. So I need to have evidence from the beginning that you know how to put together a good string of communication. If someone cannot identify these in their own materials, how are they going to identify them when they're proofing work that we're going to send out? You know, I don't have that confidence to trust them. And I know it sounds kind of harsh, but at the same time, you know, remember, we get 200 to 300 resumes, so I can afford to be picky.
We're reading them all ourselves, I should say, but I do know there are automated systems in larger corporate entities where you know, they have a very large HR department, and that's one of the criteria. It'll just spit it out as it doesn't even get to the HR person if it's submitted with typos, because it doesn't I don't want to say artificial intelligence, but it doesn't computer-based proofreading. And if there's typos in it, it instantly just gets rejected. We're kind of doing that on a personal level because it's very personal to us. But yeah, it's a big deal. And it's kind of like shocking how many show up with typos in it, to be very honest. Yeah.
And I think I can also date some of the resumes, a cover letter or an email with, it's like, this is not a text. This is not a Snapchat. Like, I should not be getting 3-word sentences with no punctuation, things like that too. That's a rant for another time. But you were talking earlier about how people don't include their basic, you know, where they're located, the city or the region where they live. You know, there's a lot of other things that people don't put on their resume, like their email address. Now, I can understand maybe not putting your phone number. Even then, I think a phone number is a standard, you know, business form of communication. But how are we to contact someone? Do you expect me to go back, find the email in my system from where you sent the resume? We usually print these out, so I have a stack on my desk. So that's just one thing. Do you have other things that you think people are missing?
Well, we should note that we're also using online listing services at times. And that means that when you submit a resume, and this might be kind of a knowledge-based thing. You submit a resume through a service, we get the email from the service, not your email. So we actually don't, you know, everybody's thinking, oh, Lori, I didn't have my email in there. Fine, you just hit reply to the email. No, we can't, because it's coming to us as here's resume number, you know, 00111888, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't give us that information. We could go back into the back-end system and look it all up, but I'm really not investing that much time into it. So, include your email address. It's, you know, the phone number thing I can understand. Actually, here's a conversation, and we haven't talked about this one. What if we have a phone number? Do we know if it's a landline? Do we know if it's a cell phone number? Do we know if we can text to it? Look for that to be there?
I don't, because I would never assume, I would never text someone as a first point of contact.
True.
And maybe, again, call me old fashioned or business, whatever, but I just don't think that's proper.
I'm actually thinking ahead after we've accepted somebody through a phone interview process, then we're bringing them in, you know, and we're getting information to them. If we want to send a last minute update with a change, do we text it? And we had that come up a few times, but anyways, maybe on a resume at this stage, it should say if you're going to include a contact number, if it's a mobile number, if it's not, if text messaging is okay. And if it's not, again, information you can put in your favor for the hiring manager is probably good.
Well, since we're already on the subject of resumes, and I think this would be a good place to talk about it. Let's talk about the design of the resume, the presentation. What are your expectations for how a resume should look?
I will say, if a resume is done in Microsoft Word and it's just a Microsoft Word document, in other words, just a list of text, maybe some bullet points and stuff, but no real design to it, it is a presentation design studio you're applying to. So that's probably not what I'm excited to see.
Agreed.
So I could do it. Now, there's the opposite end for the person that's all flowers and design, and there's more design than content, or the content's buried within the design. Can you say something about that?
I'll be honest. There was a couple resumes a couple years ago that we received. I wasn't sure about the experience of the person, but the resume just looked so clean. And I'm like, let's talk to this person anyway, just in case. And I don't remember actually how that one turned out, but I'm okay with bullets on a resume. I am okay. I want you to present information to me that's clean and easy to follow. So unlike in the presentation world where bullets are evil, I think they're perfectly acceptable, but within reason and well-designed and consistent and, not overused,
Talk about design school resumes, how every single one seems to have the little percentage wheel of this is my experience in each of these apps. And it does, if you're doing your resume with the little percentage bars or little percentage donut chart, Everybody does it. It pretty much identifies you as a new, inexperienced designer. Now, we're not opposed to that. We do hire right out of design school. I think that's kind of become our favorite. As long as we know we have a ramp up time period, I think that's become our modus operation. I think that's not a bad thing for us. I do think maybe disguising it is bad, but it is a design school element. I don't think that's a real world element. And then what I was saying earlier, actually may have got lost, is, you know, some resumes are so over the top on design and the content gets so small or kind of broken apart and stuff, it becomes hard. It's almost like a Where's Waldo hunt to discover where the listing of job experience is and stuff. I think those have been overproduced and those can have a negative effect as well. Although they do stand out, at least they stand out as, wow, this person put a lot of effort into us. Whereas it's just like the Microsoft Word documents, like, oh, somebody typed some stuff. Not impressive.
And also just, you know, obviously when you're talking about content on the resume, you know, we do want to know what jobs you've worked at before. What did you do at those jobs? I also want to know what software you're familiar with. And I give bonus points when people will say, I am an expert at this. I don't believe them, but it tells me that's their strongest software. You know, I like knowing when what you're an expert at, what you're proficient at, you know, that kind of thing. Bonus points if you give references. I think that shows that that you have people that to refer you, especially if it's previous employers. I think that's a great thing for me to see at a glance. Anything else?
As opposed to like Aunt Gladie as my reference.
Yes. Yes.
We've had those scenarios where it's family. Let's talk portfolios and we'll just kind of run through some items here. What do you think about portfolios?
I think the physical portfolio, I think we've seen one, right? One or two in the last couple of years.
Well, the traditional big oversized one. I think we've seen a lot more smaller flipbook ones, which are absolutely good.
And I'm okay with those. I don't see very many. I think they're perfectly acceptable so long as the contents really reflect your work. And I need to see digital work because let's face it, we live in a digital age. I'm not saying print is dead. It is not. But so much of what we do, you need to do digitally. So I need to see a good you know, good representation. But I think
online portfolios are okay.
Online. Yeah.
Everything, you know, getting a link to an online portfolio is okay.
Yeah.
Getting a PDF full of pieces is okay. You know, we should say something about links and portfolios because we had this happen more than a few times.
Oh, yeah. I think it's awkward. If you are going into an interview, you do not have a physical portfolio, which is fine. I think you need to be prepared on your phone to be able to send a link to your portfolio immediately instead of having to look it up on your phone and or tell someone, you know, it's http://, you know, no. I just think it's professional and it's helpful for the process if we don't already have a link to be able to send one right away.
If we actually make it to the interview stage, it means we've already looked at stuff. I think you should be fully prepared. I was actually going with the note that we've received resumes that say, here's my portfolio, and the portfolio link doesn't work. It like goes to a web page that doesn't exist. It goes to a Behance link that isn't theirs. Or I mean, you should probably make sure those things are functional before you send them out. You probably set it up in design school, and now you're into your maybe second, third position, and you just haven't looked at it because in your mind it's still there. Look at it all. If you have that in-person interview, if you make it at stage, be prepared to send a link immediately, like from your phone, should somebody want to look it up and they don't have it in front of them. What about if somebody wants to bring in, so traditional print portfolios are not bad. The very large oversized ones, like somebody on this podcast named Lori may have had at one point.
Hey, I had a small one too.
Yeah, you have multiple. We still have them. They're around.
I know.
Anyways, I don't think they're bad, but I do think they say one of two things immediately. And it's really funny. They're exact opposite. They either say, hey, this is my outdated portfolio because I'm an older generation designer. Lori, I don't think you go into anything with your huge oversized portfolios anymore.
Oh,
or
no.
They say I'm a fresh student because that's what that program reinforced, which isn't always the most current things. Now, the content needs to instantly focus on digital work. I'm just going to say this about
for us.
For us. Yeah, exactly. This is interviewing for a presentation designer. Yeah. It's all digital. Keep the fine art and photography in the back half of the portfolio.
Yeah.
They're not where you should start because they're not a part of the job.
Yep. If you can show me you have a good handle on design stuff, and then I can see that you are a really good illustrator. Maybe you're a good doodler. Maybe you're a good lettering artist. That's a bonus in my book. But what I want you to be able to do is take me through your, let's assume it's your website or your online portfolio. And I want you to honestly tell me this was a school project. This was a passion project that I'm doing. This was a pro bono thing. You know, we all do pro bono work, I think, especially when we're starting out. And I think that's a great way to get experience and get back to the community. Or this was, you know, this was work for hire. I got paid to do this. But more than that, I want to know, did you, you know, do all the concepting by yourself? Was this a team project? What part of this was all you? How did you come up with the idea? I would love to know what program did you do this in? How did you set that type? Why did you decide to use Illustrator for this versus InDesign or things like that? I want to get to know you and I want to know your real skills.
Absolutely. And those, okay, so maybe we should say this. If you're applying for a design position, you need some sort of portfolio or reference of your skills. You can't just say, I'm really good at Photoshop because... I'm working with an admin this week and they've got Photoshop on their computer. And yes, they're opening, resizing, and cropping. Those are not actually the skills we're looking for in a designer, but they know Photoshop. You know, you have to show some examples. And to your point there, Lori, because we've had this come up a few times, people, beautiful layout of an ad. I'm just going to go with the ad because I can think of one in particular. And we started talking about it and Lori asked immediately, hey, what did you, where did you do this part of the work? Oh, you did that in Photoshop. Okay. And this typesetting over here, what'd you do that in? Oh, you did that in Photoshop too. Now I'm thinking, well, that really should be Illustrator or InDesign for this amount of typesetting that's in this piece. Photoshop wouldn't be my preferred tool, especially when it got down to editing and other things like that. Okay. So we're pushing them. Gets into it, this, that, and the other. Turns out, after a very long conversation about this design piece, because we're trying to ask questions about, hey, what are your knowledge bases? Where are your experiences? And we're also trying to glean a little bit of information about your personality and how you're going to fit into the team. So it's not always about the design skills. There's a lot of external elements we're trying to figure out. Yeah, we get done with this whole conversation, and it turns out they actually didn't work on any of it except for one photo element in this collage. But they
and
were
I'm okay
to-
with that. I'm okay well, with that if you tell me oh, that up really? Front.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No, no. If you tell me that up front, I recognize that. In fact, I can't imagine that every piece in your portfolio was completely you. I mean, we don't work in a vacuum in this industry. Some projects, of course, especially if you are coming from a freelancing side. But I appreciate honesty. You get points in my book.
I agree. Absolutely. The one I was thinking of, it really didn't come across as honest. It was kind of like we almost had to drag it out that this wasn't my design. There was a creative director involved. There was somebody picking the stock photography, but their job was to do production work, which I was totally great with if I would have known that up front.
Well, I think people are coached to put your best foot forward, and they take that rah-rah, that coaching, and they begin exaggerating. And I don't think that's going to serve you well at all. Not at the end of the day.
So what stands out for a design position? We're looking for a presentation designer. What are a few key elements that you're going to look for before we talk to anybody on paper, on their portfolio, their resume, their cover letter? What are some of the things we're looking at?
Past work. I think your experience, have you worked, in retail? There's nothing wrong with that. Have you been working in retail while you're in design school? That's fine. Have you been working at a sign company or, a publication type of office? That's okay. I just want to know, what have you done? And of course, the portfolio, examples of your work, however you choose to share that. And then education.
Well, education. Yeah. Yeah. That's where I was kind of going for.
Yeah. And that's a 50-50 though. Yes. I would love for everyone we hire to come out of design school. And to be fair, I think almost everyone on our design staff came out of design school, didn't they? Thinking.
Hold on, thinking.
There's a few standouts.
A few standouts that know, and a couple of them came to us as they were in design school.
So what I'm saying is education is very important. If you have a 4-year degree in graphic design, that tells me a lot. That tells me commitment. That tells me you've got to have some basic design principles, you know, drilled into your head. Even if you come from a 2-year program or a certificate type program, I'm okay with that. I just want to know that you have a jump start, that I'm not going to have to be teaching you design principles, and that, you know, the general vernacular that we use, that you're not going to kind of be a deer in the headlights and going, what does she mean that I need to do a vertical symmetry or whatever? I don't think that's a term, but
I liked it.
Sounded good. Okay. Right?
So what are, let's go with some negatives. What are some bad items? What are some things that when we see it, they instantly turn off? Okay. We already said a few. You don't include your area. And we said we're regionally based. You have bad grammar. That's a bad thing to put out there. What are some of the kind of like the bigger elements, or maybe while we're talking to them?
So we're moving beyond resumes now.
Okay. Yeah. Let's just say we've gone through the resume and we're now conversing.
Talking.
So our process, let's just throw this one out there. This is going to be different for every company. We receive your resume, portfolio, and everything. We're going to do a private review of it just on our own and decide if we go forward. We're going to pull that down, and we're going to come up with a number of people we're going to do phone interviews with. So we're going to do a phone interview first. We'll do 15 to 20 minute conversation. And that's giving us a feeling about the person, but we're also asking questions about experience, availability, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we're going to pull it down. We try and keep it to 10 interviews. I mean, literally, we're going 300 resumes to 10 interviews because they take time and we just don't have a lot of time. So we figure out of 10 candidates, we should be able to pull 1, 2, maybe 3, and somebody's going to accept the offer. Yeah. We're also not going for, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like the lowest salary you can get is called a,
I don't know.
You know, like what's the lowest amount you can get? Like what's
minimum
the
minimum wage?
Yeah. We're not going, thank you. We're not doing minimum wage. We're coming in as, hey, we expect you to have experience and we're going to transfer that design experience into working in PowerPoint. So we're talking to this person. What are some bad things that come up?
Well, like you said, with the salary, you know, don't say that your starting point is more than the listing is advertising. And that's
something that's come up. You're right.
It has. Okay. And again, I think that goes back to there's classes, there's teachers, and maybe I'm wrong, but since I'm the hiring manager, I can tell you it doesn't go far with me like that. You're out. It's like I stated clearly what was in the listing. And, you know, unless you're, you know, some amazing person with a halo around your head walking into my office, I don't know that you're worth that. And that's not what I'm looking for.
Well, okay. So we actually list a range. We don't say here's the salary because we're going to go for, we don't label junior and lead designers, but we're going to put somebody with less experience. We know the first year is going to be a ramp up process. We also know that we're going to be moving towards presentation design, and that's a learning curve and translating skills into another platform. So we know there's there, but we do list a range and it's based on experience and people have come in and said, I need to start higher than that range. I'm like, well, that's great. We've got a corporate budget that says this is what we can afford for this position to guarantee it. So we're not going to go above it. So we're going on to the next name. Remember, we started with 300. We talked to 50 and we picked 10. We've got more options. So thank you. And you may be perfect, but it doesn't fit our business arena. So we're thinking about this from a business perspective, not how amazing you may be.
We've learned over time, you know, as business owners, we went for the emotion years and years ago. And I think we've learned over time, you have to look at the numbers too. It's not that we're mean. That's just, it's a business decision.
What about, we've had people exaggerate during their personality. But we've had them exaggerate their experience and their knowledge base of certain programs. Notes
and
on
I
that?
I hate
comments?
That. Well, I want you to be honest because I like to take people for face value. So if you tell me, you know, that you have been working in Photoshop for 5 years, I'm going to have certain expectations. And so the bottom line is if you exaggerate and oversell yourself, we're going to figure it out. and you're not probably going to have a job with us. Because
you know that figure it out thing? Few days to a few weeks in the studio. Yep. You're working with a whole design team. You're not in a silo. You're not even in an office by yourself. There is no closed door. We're a big open bullpen area. And we get feedback pretty darn quick that things aren't going to be as smooth as we were hoping for. Yeah. What are some good things that people should include? Like, you know, the years. Well, okay. Let me rephrase that. Good things to include, and we're kind of moving forward. I'm going to say this, we're not moving forward in the interview stage, but just overall. So during that resume submission, that phone interview, and that in-person interview, I was going to say, where I started this before I got a little sidetracked there, is they should include years and dates next to all their experience. I can see where you received a degree. That's wonderful. But it's more of a negative to me to not see there's a year than, you know, with just the name of the institution or the program. I question it. Like, why wouldn't you list that? Did you actually not complete the degree? So you're trying to hide that you went there but didn't finish it, so I can't research it? Or are you saying it's so old or it's so new? And again, we're not negative on new degrees or newly, how do I want to say that? Fresh experience. But, you know, it stands out. It does jump across as a negative or missing when it's not there.
Yep. I totally agree.
We covered the portfolio, and it could be a PDF or it can be a link. Just make sure they work. I think those are good things and necessary things. It's a design position. You can't just say you're a good designer.
Going back to resumes, sometimes we don't get all the dates. And I do want to know when you were and where you were. There was one resume that stands out to me, and I loved this resume in that there were two actually. One had a lapse of like 2 years of no work. And I thought, ooh, that's usually kind of a warning sign, could be. But in the cover letter, they explained that they had a medical situation. I'm like, oh, okay, totally get it. Going further with that, there was another resume. And there were several job turnovers in a quick succession. However, this person, I feel, very wisely put reason for leaving. And she gave a brief description. There were layoffs, and I don't remember the other ones, but they were all logical reasons. And it was really nice to get an understanding of, oh, okay. So you didn't quit, it was business decisions or whatever. I love that transparency. And that person did come in for an interview. I just don't remember which one it was and if we hired them. So sorry.
Good things I would say is on that, I want to say a personal email, but not address. I want them to be personalized. The cover letter email, it shouldn't be just cut and paste. It should be personalized to each job. It's an introduction to yourself. Give us some details. As example, I hadn't even thought about that. The one person that did say, hey, I have you'll see a gap in my history is because of this, that. That's not the one I was actually thinking of. Somebody else had a larger gap, and it's because they moved out of state to care for, relatives, aging parents. And then they were back in and they're like, hey, I'm back into the job search now. Yep. Things have been resolved. And that went really well for me. But it also gave a sense of the person a little bit. I also am really big on a good thing is sufficient details on a resume. A lot of times it's very, very minimal amount of information. Now, I'm not saying the 4-page resume is a good thing at all.
No.
But I am saying enough to say.
No more than two.
Two pages?
Personal? Oh, no more than two pages.
Yes.
I understand two pages might be needed. Oh, yeah. Sorry, side note.
But you have to include details on what it was you accomplished at that job. And they just can't be, I was the senior designer in this department.
Right.
Tell me what you focused on. What did you do? Was it digital media? Was it production? Was it ideating? What was it?
Yeah.
These are good things to help us make a decision on, do we talk to you? Yeah.
So we've regressed back to resumes. I think we're fixated on resumes.
Well, it's where everything starts. And, there's so many of them that we have to wade through. It just comes up as a big thing.
I agree.
Okay. What about,
let's push forward.
Okay.
Let's just really briefly high level. Let's talk about an in-office interview. And this might be a little too personal because it's us, it's our company, but I think some of this could be very applicable across the board. Don't arrive 20 minutes early. We're a small office. there's nowhere for you to sit where we don't all know you're sitting there for 20 minutes. And then I feel pressured to wrap up whatever I'm doing to see you because I don't like the fact that you're sitting out there waiting. And
So if you were to tell somebody to show up, what would be the timing? Obviously not late.
Not late. And when I say not late, if you walk in 1 or 2 minutes, I'm not going to penalize you for it. If you walk in 10 minutes, I'm going to be like, uh-oh, are you going to be able to get to work on time? But I think, and maybe this is too narrow, I think 5 minutes ahead of time is perfectly acceptable. In my mind, that's what I'm expected. Maybe 10. But I think 5 minutes, like, yeah, that shows a sign of respect that you're on top of it, that you're taking this seriously.
I agree with that. Yep. Yeah. Good to go.
Okay. Okay, can I just say a really funny one? Don't hurt my hand when you shake it. There's been a couple times, and it wasn't guys.
Oh.
Ow, I don't need the power grip. A nice handshake.
You're in in-office interview. Be relaxed. We're actually there to see the real you. I understand it's a tense situation. I know there's a lot of posturing that's occurring, but we're there to actually get, again, it's kind of like the resume. If you don't give sufficient details, we can't sufficiently say this is somebody that we want to move forward with.
Yeah. And we try and be pretty transparent. I've seen both of us in the interview situation. We try and be pretty transparent about, our office and let you see us a little bit. So it's kind of a mutual interview in a sense.
I think that we as a company try and convey this. We let people know like, hey, we've already talked to we've talked to 50 people. We're culling it down. You're one of 10 people we're bringing to the office. This means you're doing something right. We're being transparent about it. And the goal with that is to try and let them know it's good. We're looking for a good conversation. I mean, saying too little, it can be bad because, I don't get a feel for you. But the person that doesn't stop talking, that's also not helping you because it's not going to get a positive review of the interview process. Not what we're going to remember for. You got to give just enough detail, but not too much. That's a horrible answer for somebody going into an interview because you don't know what those parameters are. But basically, answer the questions, ask a few questions, but don't go too much.
What about the rules of, what about the standard rules of how do you dress for an interview? This is a design position. What do you think? I mean, I think I know what you're going to say.
Okay. So we're a little bit unique in that we're a small studio. It's like, 1200 square feet. Everybody walks in, everybody gets to see you. We're a business casual at best studio, but when you come in for an interview, we're going to look for professionalism. So the jeans and t-shirt, probably not the end of the spectrum you want to be on. That might be a little too casual and showing you're not taking things serious. We've had that.
Yeah.
The bow tie. Yeah. The bow tie stands out. bow tie
guy? It was a lovely bow tie, but it was, I didn't know what to make of the bow tie.
It definitely was character. It was a character element. And he was great. He just actually didn't have the design skill. He didn't have the background we were looking for.
Yeah.
Which was kind of unfortunate. But hey, does a bow tie and a formal suit fit into an interview? It can, as long as you acknowledge it.
I would give it to someone. We've had several people walk in. I recognize when you're walking into an interview, you should dress your best, dress to impress.
So on the impress part, I'm just going to throw this one in there. And I'm not sure where this falls in the HR spectrum of things, but the super smoker person that walks in and their clothes and their breath are overwhelming. They're an overpowering cigarette smoke aura. It doesn't belong in an interview. It's not a professional element. That may be them and that may be okay on the job thing, but it's definitely not okay as a first impression. So that's come up a few times. I guess the other end of the thing is the heavy perfume cologne could be a little overpowering. We're, again, not a huge business and probably means you don't generally do that. And you went a little over excessive to try and make an impression. And you did.
I've been nervous. What else?
Well, at the very top here, I said we were going to kind of cover why it's, I want to just make sure we don't leave this one hanging. I said, you and I have been having discussions about when we're going to put out a help wanted listing. And for us, it's a very strategic element. We actually have to think about this way in advance. So here's the reasoning for TLC Creative Services. We're going to put out a listing. We're going to leave it live for 3 weeks. We travel a lot. We, our projects take us to be with clients all over the world. So we're constantly on the move. So we want the interview to be both Laura and I. So we both need to be in the office. We need to kind of back we kind of look at this like, okay, here is our ideal window where we're actually in the office together for 3 weeks. That's when we want to have gone through this whole process and we want to have the person coming in for onboarding. Okay, so let's go prior to that. We're going to give ourselves another 3 weeks for, We give ourselves three weeks for in-person. You know, we've identified our 10 people. We want to give a window of time for everybody to come in and us to evaluate and decide what we want to do. We got to go prior to that. We need time for the phone interviews. Now that's actually the 3 week gap. There it is. 2 weeks for the in-office. We give 3 weeks for the phone interviews because we're connecting with people and we're trying to do it on our timing when we're, who knows where we are. And then we've got 3 weeks prior to that, where we're going to have the job listing live, where we're going to be evaluating the resumes. And then we're going to have 2 weeks. So we have 3 weeks of live time and we give ourselves a 2 week window to kind of identify. I mean, we're looking at several months to get to the part where somebody should be in the office and being a joining onboarding on the team. So it's a little bit of a strategic issue that we've encountered because we have put listings out there and literally had resumes come in and go, we don't want to hire this person now because we're not around. Like there's literally not time for us to onboard the system. We didn't think this through. Hence, we now are strategic about it. Strategic meaning that this conversation led to this episode. So hopefully it'll be a something that'll help somebody out there with the mindset of where we're at.
And one thing, you know, we started off and I think the title of this is has presentation designer somewhere in there. And we haven't talked much about presentation designing. And I think you hit on it up front, but I just want to make sure we cover it that, you know, we don't expect someone saying, oh, I'm a PowerPoint expert, unless, to be fair, unless you are now certified through the Presentation Guild. That has a whole new meaning. And I can't wait to get my first resume with someone that has a certification because that weighs beautifully in my book. But we aren't as concerned about the PowerPoint skills. We're concerned about the design skills and your willingness to learn how we do PowerPoint or Keynote or whatever presentation style we're doing. So I know we haven't been talking specifically presentations this whole time, but it does all tie in that we're looking for the backbone so that we can have you join our team and blend in and mold you if needed to work the way we love working and being creative.
I'm seeing corporations now put it out there that that's what they're looking for because the industry itself is solidifying into that. This is a core tenet. I'm waiting for the first design program to embrace it and have a certified design program. And maybe the end result of that is they take the presentation certification, the PowerPoint certification, because that is now a globally recognized thing. It's the only thing out there. Or somebody that did presentation work at another agency, another corporation. I don't think we've been, okay, we did encounter that with one, maybe two people. One person went well, one person it kind of showed they'd
I think we're going to see it more and more. One of the corporations I work for reached out to me and like, do you know anyone we can hire as a temp? Actually, they're looking for a 6 month temp. And so that listing was put on the Presentation Guild's website, actually. I'm seeing, like you said, more and more people are looking to hire presentation designers. So it's an exciting time to be.
I think we've hit our knowledge base.
Some good stuff.
A little bit of this is personal. A lot of it's practical experience and a practical skills that I think people are. I'm just amazed at how people don't follow the basics: grammar, punctuation, giving not a cover letter, but an introduction email because you're not allowed. You know, we're not asking for an in person. Those things just reflect so much on you before you even get to show you. They have to be good. And you know, if we're going to get 200 resumes, I'm going to say 50 of them are going to go out because of location. They're another city, another state, another country.
If you live in LA, sorry.
we work in LA, but we plan 3 hours to get there. So we're going to toss out 50 of them just based on that. Another 50 to 75 are instantly going to go out because of they just don't reflect well. They don't look professional. And you might be the greatest person, the best person for our team, but it didn't show it in the upfront materials and we have to have some way to limit it down. But there's lots of jobs out there and I'm hoping that anybody listening to this gets an opportunity to jump in. Presentation design It's a real industry. It's a real skill set, and it's not something you can fake, because we are constantly fixing agency work that says, here's the PowerPoint template for this group. Here's the PowerPoint presentation. They're not. They're a bunch of slides with content on top, and they have none of the actual things that make it truly leverageable by the group. And we're fixing those because there's skill sets there. So I guess I'm just saying that because we don't hire for those skills. We hire for the design and the expertise. Yeah. And then we train to make sure you understand those and move forward. I think we have a great team. I'm very excited about it. And
I love our team.
Upcoming here soon, somebody will be joining the team because we have a need. We just don't have timing right now. Hey, Lori, thank you for joining me. I know I drug you into this last minute, and I didn't want to bring Nolan and Sandy because we're all in different positions on how we hire. But
I apologize for jumping around. But that was fun.
Hey, it's just a conversation. Everybody's listening in. So everybody listening in, have a great day. Thanks for joining the Presentation Podcast. We'll have another episode in a couple of weeks. And we thank Lori for me stealing part of her day for this to pull her away from some other project work. Hey, thanks much. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation design conversation. Episode show notes are available on your favorite podcast software or at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for the hosts, or comments through the podcast website. And please share with others. Mention us, leave a review, and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. New episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.